You heard the legend.
Yeah!
Kickstart your day with the man who dominated the field like no other.
Carey!
Wayne Carey. And the sports journo who's done it all, Mark Howard. Yeah! The Dead Set Legends do breakfast on Triple M.
He may have dominated the footy field like no other, but the king, the champ, the best of all time has not dominated the operating theatre. We still haven't seen him since his little hernia operation. So hopefully, Duck, if you're listening out there, you're okay. But don't worry, we've got plenty to fill the show. So much to look forward to. Danny Green is coming in at 6:30 to tell us about who he's fighting and when on earth he's going to fight Anthony Mundine. Lee Montagna will be popping by. Jake Carlisle sounds like he could be going to the Hawks. I don't think that'll impress Joey too much. He'll bring us up to date there. And we had the chance to sit down with Greg Norman yesterday. It's a fascinating interview. Greg talks about everything from business to golf to his recent holiday to Kyrgyzstan, where it nearly got away from him, to be honest. So really looking forward to hearing from Greg Norman throughout the morning. The temperature's gone up in the studio because the great man Danny Green has just wandered in. Hello, Daniel.
Morning, Howie. How are you, mate?
Yeah, lovely to see you. We'll have a bit of a chat about what you're doing away from boxing shortly, but let's get straight to the boxing. Connie Conrad. Good name.
Yeah, cool name, isn't it?
Good name. The big German, Connie Conrad. So he's your next fight. Congratulations.
Yeah cheers. Howie, on the 2nd of December, and I want to string together a couple of fights pretty close, in close succession. Excuse me, and after my last fight here in Melbourne, I was successful. I was happy to get the victory, but I was, I've been out for a while, and I was nervous, and it was a bit rusty to start with. So I want to, put another fight together, and I want to start letting my hands go a bit. And this guy, I'll be victorious against him. I'll get knocked out, but he's a guy who comes forward. He's got a lot of skill, and he's a younger guy. He's like 12 years my junior, and
they're all your junior now, Danny, because yeah. You're like 57 now, mate. So they're all your junior.
Good point, Howie. Everyone's younger than me now.
Yeah, I'm happy to say that from the other side of the bench here.
No,
the last fight, the Argentine, he's a sort of I watched it. He was a sort of awkward character. See, it was hard. It looked like it was hard to get into your rhythm a touch.
Mate, you're bang on.
Analyst.
You are.
That's what they call me in boxing. The analyst.
It was bang on, mate. It was really difficult, and I said to someone, If we were to have to go outside and we'll have to, fight over lunch money, I reckon we'd still be fighting.
Yeah,
he's
right.
a strong, hard, tough man. But very awkward and made it very difficult to get into a rhythm. So I listened to my trainer, Angela. Obviously, I didn't want to get any damage. I didn't want to take too much damage. And especially being out for so long, it was hard to find my rhythm to begin with. But he made it very awkward. So every time he went to throw a bomb, I would either step away because he needed a set. We had a plan. We knew kind of what his style would be after, viewing him. And then, I'd throw the jab and or strike him so he'd have to reset and not allow him to get set to throw bombs. Or when I would attack him, he'd kind of go defensive. So it really made it difficult, but I was just happy to get the victory.
This next fella talking about throwing bombs, I had a bit of a look on YouTube knowing you're coming in now. He looks like he winds right up. He only had a couple of losses, which his last was to a bloke that's won a world title. Has both losses been to world champions?
His last fight was to the world champion.
Yeah.
The WBA world champion, Jürgen Bremer, two-time champ. And he lost to another guy called Denis Inkin, who was a Russian guy, who was also the WBO world champion, light heavyweight world champion. So
he dropped some bombs, though, this boy, Danny. You want to be a bit careful. He looks like he's a heavy puncher. Well, they're all heavy punchers from where I sit, to be honest.
Yeah, look, he lets him go, and he's a younger guy, and he's strong. He's a strong kid, and when I say kid, he's 30 years old, but for me, he is a kid. But, he lets him go. Look, I'm just excited to be back fighting in Melbourne on the 2nd of December, And I want to get back to, let my hands go and throw in some good combinations, and hopefully, it'll be a pretty explosive fight because that's how this guy fights, and obviously that's how I fight. And I'm looking forward to it.
You're a West Aussie boy, but you've taken Melbourne under your wing and vice versa. It's great to see you fighting here. Why Melbourne? It's sort of Melbourne's fallen in love with you, no doubt. Is it a bit of vice versa? Hopefully.
I love the place. Not just because I'm on the radio and people at home or when they're in the cars listening. I actually love Melbourne. If I have one regret in my career, it'd be that I didn't base myself in Melbourne. I based myself in Sydney to begin with, and it was great, and it was a fan, and I don't regret that at all. But I wish I'd come down to Melbourne a lot more often. Just a great city. People just get it here. They're cool, and it's just a fantastic place, and it's like my home away from home, so I can't thank the people enough for their hospitality.
Danny Green, brought to you by Melbourne Tourism. No, I like it, Danny. I like it a lot. Danny Green is in the studio fighting Connie Conrad in Melbourne. Where do we get tickets, Danny? When is it? Where do we get tickets?
It's at Hisense Arena, December 2nd, and tickets are on sale now at TicketTech.com.
Right, so jump on that and go and watch Danny in action. What we want to see, though, Danny, you get this job done. Monday, it's the one at the end of the horizon. It's the one we all talk about. It's the one we want to see. It's happened once, probably 10 years ago now, is it?
Next year. May next year be 10 years.
Well, when's the next one going to happen? The rematch.
Probably the way this bloke wants it, the way Chuck wants it. He'd like to see it in May 2050.
But you seem to genuinely want it. I know there's a lot of talk in boxing, but it's what the people want to see. It looks like it's something you want to deliver, Danny.
I want to give the people what they want to see. As a fighter, that's what I want to do, and it's what every fighter should want to do.
Mm.
And with Mayweather Pacquiao, when Mayweather fought Pacquiao, it broke records worldwide. Every pub in the country, in this country, was jammed.
Yep.
When he fought Andre Berto, when Mayweather fought Andre Berto 3 weeks ago, a friend of mine owns a pub who couldn't fit enough people into the pub when he fought when Mayweather fought Pacquiao. Mm. There were 6 people watching.
Yep.
It was a ghost town. So it's similar to what's going on with Chalk as well with me. Although we sell the stadium, when we fight, we sell the stadium. We don't give many tickets away. It's sold because people are kind of weird. And we put on a great undercard. My matchmaker, Angelo Hyder, and my trainer, he puts on a fantastic undercard. We've got local talent. So we've got 6 guys from Melbourne that are fighting. Actually more, but the main fights are 6 guys.
Yep.
And young and up-and-coming talent, the 2 Maloney twins, Jade Mitchell, Ryan Breeze, Mitch Clark. So there's a lot of local talent here that we kind of want to try and nurture and
yep.
you know, foster and bring through so they can be the guys that are main eventing down the track, which would be fantastic.
Mundine, Danny. Mundine. Is it going to happen? Do you actually think you'll fight Mundine before you both retire for good?
If it doesn't happen, it won't be my fault. And it's what the fans want to see. It's what the public wants to see. It's been 10
years
next year.
So it's from his camp that it's not happening?
100%.
Why doesn't he want to fight?
You tell me. 10 years. So if I said to you,
I'll give you 2 reasons: your right fist and your left fist to be the first.
If I said to you, Howie, we had an immediate rematch clause in our contract. And look, make no mistake, Anthony Mundine is a fantastic athlete, and you can't deny that. Like, he was a first grade, you know, class rugby league player, and you know, a great player, and he's been a fantastic boxer. Crossed over to a very hard sport, one of the hardest sports you can cross over to, from a team sport to a single man sport, and has done extremely well. He's a phenomenal athlete. But he's nowhere near the athlete that he claims he is, and he's given us some great comments and some great comedy over the years with his comments. And you know, the fact is, people want to see me and him get on, and I'm ready to give the people what they want to see.
That's what I like to hear, Danny. You've grown up in the spotlight, as we said. You're 57 now, but you've been in this cape for a long time. Nick Kyrgios is a really interesting one at the moment, because I can think back to when Leighton Hewitt was a so-called brat, Andre Agassi was a so-called brat, even Federer used to throw his racket. Now they're statesmen. What do you think when you see Kyrgios? Do you think, mate, pull your head in, or do you think, listen, he's a young bloke growing up in the spotlight and he'll figure it out? Because you've been international, you've represented your country, you know what it's like.
Look, it's a really hard one
it
for
is.
Me to say because, excuse me, the spotlight, you know, like it's so, you know, it's on him and it's hard. But, you know, I think you have to represent your country and you have to represent your family, your friends and yourself in the correct manner. And he hasn't been doing that. He's been, you know, blowing up and saying some ridiculous things. But look, I don't know, mate. He's a young guy and look, he rubs people the wrong way. And look, it's really not my, I don't even know whether he means to do it or whether he's actually doing it to try and get a reputation as a bad boy. But he's kind of picked the wrong sport to be a bad boy in tennis, you know, like, come on.
I would have thought.
Take up UFC or take up boxing or take up something, you want to be a bad boy, but tennis ain't really the sport you want to be known as a bad guy or a tough guy in. But anyway, that's the way it rolls. And look, I don't really think I need to say a lot because I think everyone else kind of says it all.
Yeah, fair enough too. Before we let you go, I'm fascinated by your training. We joke around about your age, but 42 you are now. How hard do you train? And describe to me what you do in a hard session and how you feel at the end of it. It fascinates me this side because I've had the pleasure of dealing with a lot of athletes and I've never seen anyone as a group train harder than boxers, and they tell me you train hard for a boxer, which means you're a freak.
Yeah, look, it's horses for courses. You know, a lot of sports do a lot of tough training. So, you know, swimming,
yeah, not more than I've seen in boxing though.
Well, it's different. It's more intense, and it's for a shorter space generally, but it's more intense. You know, a lot of impact when you're training hard. But for instance, at my age, I'm 42, and my trainer Angelo is very, very good. He's very, very knowledgeable with mature age fighters. He's had a fair few of them. Old buggers must just glue to him. he must be a softy, but he's as mad as a cut snake. I think that's why we get on. And
no doubt.
Yesterday, I was pretty tired. Had a long day with the press conference and everything. We're doing the press rounds and doing a few things, so I was really tired. So we had the day off. He said, "No, that's what I'm training. It's not gonna, I'm not going to get fitter by training hard yesterday." On the 2nd of December, yesterday's training session isn't going to benefit me. So we're really smart in kind of monitoring and looking after what I do. So at this age, it's about less is more. It's an old saying, but it really is true. Train hard, train intensely when the time's right, when I need to, and just kind of look towards December 2. That's when I want to peak and be at my maximum, you know, fitness level. and be in the best shape I can be. And it's about monitoring that. So, yeah, I train hard, and I always have trained hard for since I was 12 years old, man. I've trained like a demon, and that's just that's how I am. It's in my DNA.
Fine.
But I've just got to now the older I get, the more – and I listen, you know, to my body, and we kind of listen and we talk to each other and work out where I am. And he knows me very well, so he knows exactly how I'm feeling. He'll go, oh, Craig Rennie, let's pull back. Let's have a day off. Yep. Let's just go half-hearted here. Let's go for a swim. Let's go for a relax.
Final question. Why, when I hit the speedball, I hit it the first time and then miss it the second time? Like, how long does it take to hit that freaking thing without banging your knuckles on the bit of wood above it and just missing it looking like a clown?
Do you know what? It's like riding a bike. It really is.
No,
it's...
I can ride a bike. I can't get that speedball, though,
Danny. It just takes time. It takes patience. Okay. It takes time, and goodness knows how the heck I've mastered it because I'm not patient at all. But it just takes time and patience, and my mum can do it. So it's, you know, like, it's just about, it's not
that's
about fighting.
Flattened me right out. Your mum can do it. Hey, Danny, December 2. Connie Conrad's Melbourne will be out. Once again, the venue, and where do we get our tickets?
Ticketek.com, Howie, and it's at Hisense Arena, and can't wait. Just want to thank everyone once again for the love and hospitality that I'm always afforded when I come to this great city.
That's it, and he always puts on a wonderful show, so get to see Danny in action. Danny, we appreciate your time. Have a great lead-up and have a great fight.
Appreciate it, Howie, and also, mate, have a great holiday over the West. If you need any tips, yeah, mate, give me a holler and I'll sort
sure
you out.
I need to be hanging out with your type of mates with my young family, Danny. I don't know if that's exactly
mate,
what
mate, you'll
need.
Catch fish.
That's exactly right. Right now, Joey Montagna's wandered into the studio after a bit of an Asian sojourn. Hello, Joey.
Morning, Howie. How you going?
Yeah, wonderful to see you. Right, let's get straight into it. What are you doing down at St Kilda? Jake Carlisle, he had half a jumper on from what I could gather. He was heading to Moorabbin, and then the Hawks have come in late with a deal involving Jed Anderson, etc. Are you going to get Carlisle? You've got no idea, really.
I was going to say, to be honest, I am following it like everyone else.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, I've been spending all day yesterday online and following the updates and keeping a close eye on. I actually, you know, follow it closely, all the trades and what's going on. So, yeah, very interesting. I think today might be D-Day by the sounds of it. So, hopefully we can get him. He's a good player. Love to have him at the club. I'd love to have him sent off back in my team. But obviously the club's got their plan and they're going to have to work through it.
Pick 5 does sound awfully high, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And I know the club's still really keen to keep their first round draft picks. We know as a club that we need to still get high-end talent in and that's part of our plan. But you know, also you want to get some good young players in and Freeman and Jake Carlo are trying to get the job done. So, yeah, I'll be watching like any other St Kilda supporter and fan today to see if we can get it done.
As a leader at the footy group, does the footy department sit down with you at all and discuss, we're thinking about this bloke, we're thinking about that bloke, or it doesn't really work like that?
A little bit. The coaches in the football department tend to bounce off the leaders, not so much in regards to too much in the list management, but they always sort of keep us updated on what they're doing and or letting us know what their thoughts are. But as you said, I've been away for a week, so I haven't been in touch with the club today. I'm heading down to Seaford actually this afternoon to do some stuff and a bit of weight, so I'll probably see the guys then and find out a bit more. But hopefully by then the job's done.
Yeah, looking at those chicken arms, I reckon you need to jump back.
I need to get back in the weights room, absolutely.
You're not wrong. There's talk of Jed Anderson possibly going to the Kangaroos. Now, as someone that keeps a fairly close eye on the Hawks, for those outside, you look at him and think, oh, he hasn't played that many games. He's been injured. He's had an injury. He got crook up there with influenza, but he played games in the lead up to, I want to say, the 2013 Premiership. Handy type, Joey.
He does look like a little jet, doesn't he? Watching him in the pre-season, I thought he was going to have a breakout year, but obviously pretty tough to break into that Hawthorn side, Howie, especially in the midfield. But it is an interesting one. We do know that Mitchell, Hodge and Lewis, only have a couple of years left in their midfield, so you'd think he'd be a natural replacement, but Kangaroos have offered a pretty good pick for him as well. So, it's an exciting time, the trade period now, with clubs being a bit more bold and going after players they want. So that's something else that's interesting for today.
Gee, the Cats have fired some shots, haven't they? All of a sudden, they've gone from that just outside the eight. They've got Dangerfield in there. They get Selwood in there, possibly Zach Smith. They've made some bold moves, but some strong moves.
Yeah, absolutely. And Henderson there, where he starts forward. Their team on paper now for their best 22 looks amazing. Their midfield now, I mean, with Selwood and Dangerfield and, you know, Mitch Duncan being fit, and you've still got Motlop and Caddy and Blitzarves. They look pretty awesome now, and a lot's going to depend, I suppose, on Reece Stanley and Mitch Clark, who they got to the club the year before, where they can stand up. But yeah, Geelong is certainly now all of a sudden back in contention just after one trade period.
A great story yesterday, you probably didn't see it because you were coming home, by Mark Robinson in the Herald Sun about Paddy Dangerfield. I don't know if you saw it or had a chance to read it. It was just, it was so refreshing. He said, mate, it's not the money. How much do you need? And you could just understand he just wanted to be with his family, possibly a baby coming in. I think sometimes on the outside looking in, we forget you guys as well as footballers are people.
Yeah.
And like anyone else, if you're going to have a baby, you want to be surrounded by your family. I thought it was a great article.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? And even just, I mean, it wasn't even so much about just wanting to come back to Melbourne or going to your home state. He actually had a special bond with Moggs Creek, reading the whole family history there and how much it meant to him. So I think it's really refreshing. And that's why articles like that are so good. So fans get more of an insight into the player rather than thinking, oh, he's leaving for the money or he's whatever. I think it's terrific and we need more of those things because you're right, there is a lot going on in a player's life behind the scenes that a lot of fans don't get to know about, but the more they can understand players a bit better, the easier it is to understand their decisions.
We're about to do a bit of play acting here, Joey, which concerns me because we're going to have two sheets of paper. We've got one, so now we're sitting extraordinarily close to each other. There's been a Twitter war, great man, broken out between Tex Walker and Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah, I saw that. I think it's terrific. I think it's great.
I do too. And now I'm going to be Tex.
Why do I get stuck as Kyrgios?
Well, you look more like him. You've got those swarthy European looks, do you?
Yeah, okay.
So this is how it started. I'm Tex, you're Kyrgios. I don't know who's going to play the role of Dangerfield, but when we get to that. Tex, when is this absolute galoot going to learn? What a dead set flog. Just suspend the peanut.
I don't even know who Tex Walker is. Laugh out loud.
Oh, he's going. Joey's well, going.
Trying to put a bit of a.
I like
that was a curious
it.
Accent.
I like it. This is where Dangerfield comes in, so I'm going to have to be Dangerfield. He is a bloke who raised $66,000 for the Leukemia Foundation, shaving his head. Seems a good bloke to me.
I'm currently raising money for a cancer foundation with every ace I hit. Didn't know it was a competition.
Good. Dangerfield again. Didn't say it was Nick. And just, you didn't know who Tex is, so I was filling you in. He also plays footy and wears number 13.
I wish you both the best in your career. Never said a bad word about him. That's nice.
I think it's done.
A little bit of banter.
But Patty, who's just there in Moggs Creek and only gets occasional access to the internet on the 4G because it's the middle of nowhere, comes with, sending a nice tweet now makes it impossible for me to send a smart-ass remark. Good luck in your next tournament. #juice. So then we're good.
Yeah.
But then Tex sends out a video of himself taking a hanger. I will continue to play the role of Tex and you will resume your role as Kyrgios. Tex Walker with the video attached of him taking a hanger. Here is for future reference, buddy. Just remember, this next time you spit the dummy, #galoot.
So Kyrgios didn't like that. So then he said, the fact that you just posted a whole lot of yourself makes me think you're a bit of idiot, bigger idiot than I thought.
I love that you brought a bit of sort of acting to this, Joey. Tex, geez, your head must be sore. Your thinking, or lack of it, isn't usually a good thing for Australian sport. #galoot.
You and your mate come up with that one? Laugh out loud.
And then text to Leighton Hewitt, how's about me and you onto Kyrgios and Dangerfield and we will sort it out on the court. #charity, #bit of fun, #thoughts. I think that's a good way to finish. I think that'll be nice to see the boys take it out on the tennis court.
Yeah, and there's an opportunity there now. They've thrown out the challenge for a bit of a charity doubles match. But look, as I said, I think that's fine. As long as you keep it clean and there's a bit of banter in there, I think there's nothing wrong with it. It was a bit like Bryce Gibbs earlier in the year when he was having that little dig with Luke Colquhoun, I think it was, from Point Adelaide. It's all a bit of fun. I mean, we need to see more. We need more people's personalities. Tex, I think he knew if he threw out to Kyrgios, he'd bite back. I don't think Kyrgios can help himself. But look, I think that's good. All good fun.
I didn't expect you to bring method acting style to it, though, Joey. I don't think when we suggested in the break that anyone thought you'd be rolling out a voice.
Well, Kyrgios has that little bit of accent, so I thought I'd try and throw it in there, but probably should have stuck to just keeping it natural.
Joey, time to go to the UK to our man over there, Gavin Gray, who joins us now. Good evening to you in London, Gavin.
Hi there, guys.
A couple of big stories developing. I've been following the Chris Cairns case with absolute fascination. It's developed into a perjury case now, the way I understand it. Lou Vinson has made some amazing statements about Chris Cairns, but last night, or yesterday, your time, Gavin, it was the turn of the New Zealand captain, the current New Zealand captain, Brendan McCullum, to take the stand, and he didn't hold back either. What did he have to say?
No, he didn't hold back. He said he'd been approached twice by Chris Cairns in 2008. To spot six matches. He was asked on the cross-examination, well, hang on a minute, that was in 2008. Why didn't you go to the International Cricket Council Anti-Corruption Unit until February of 2011? Because players are obliged to do so immediately. He said, and I quote, it's really difficult to explain. In hindsight, I should have. it still doesn't change the fact that he asked me to match fix on two occasions. So the evidence was quite lengthy and at times quite complex. But McCullum had said that he saw Cairns as his idol and claimed that Cairns had told him he could make roughly 200,000 Aussie dollars a game for fixing.
A game?
And he says, and I quote, "I was pretty shocked. I wish I'd said no straight away, but I couldn't comprehend that Chris would put me in that position."
They're extraordinary statements. What's your feeling the way this is going, Gavin? He's an extraordinarily charismatic man, Chris Cairns. You wouldn't meet a nicer bloke, Joe, if he came in to have a beer. He's the type of bloke people gather around. Where do you think it's going, Gavin? It doesn't sound good at this stage for Cairns.
No, I mean, you know, you've got to hear all the evidence before you can make these judgments. Certainly the witnesses have been absolutely compelling at the moment. It's been a little slow to get going, but certainly this perjury case is now getting, you know, into its stride, so to speak. The 45-year-old is accused of basically lying under oath, so perjury, because he said he'd never cheated at cricket. And slowly but slowly, we're getting evidence from many of his former friends, former teammates are saying that was not true.
So, Gavin, what's he looking at? What's the maximum penalty if he does get found guilty here? Is it jail time? And if so, how significant?
I think that's unlikely. I think what we're bound to see more of is probably fine. But, of course, it's how he's then treated by the sport that'll be so interesting. And, of course, by broadcasters, how he'll choose to pursue his career afterwards. But certainly perjury in this country is extremely serious. Not as serious as some of the Pakistani cricketers who, of course, were in court in the UK and did go to prison. But, you know, I think that is an option that is before the judge as well. It's just thought of a bit unlikely.
Gavin, the second story in London overnight, Julian Assange has obviously spent an enormous amount of time now in the Ecuadorian embassy. There's a developing story there as well.
There is. This story just seems to give and give, doesn't it? At least that's one way of looking at it. Julian Assange, she's been stuck in the Ecuadorian embassy for 40 months, now has a pain in his shoulder. So he thinks he needs an MRI scan at a hospital. The problem is, of course, that he can't go outside the Ecuadorian embassy without being arrested. So the Ecuadorians have written a request to the British government saying, look, he needs an MRI scan to get the shoulder checked out. So when can we go? And the answer has been, well, no, we're not giving you permission. And if he does step outside, then we will arrest him. Interesting, though, because no longer is there a policeman at the front door and at the back door 24 hours a day. Instead, they're saying it's covert surveillance. Not quite sure what that means. But either way, Julian Assange might have to put up with that pain in his shoulder one bit longer.
Well, the obvious question would be, he's been in a house, basically, for 40 months, Gavin. What's he done? Has he been knocking out too many push-ups in there? How's he hurt his shoulder? He hasn't been anywhere.
Well, I think it's called getting a bit older, isn't it? Yeah, you're right. He does actually use a couple of gym machines in there.
Right.
But to be in the same building and not to see, you know, real sunlight on your face for 40 months is a long time. This, of course, all over allegations of rape, which he dismisses and denies in Sweden, and the fear that he has that he will be somehow extradited to America. The situation, incidentally, has so far cost the British taxpayer in excess of 20 million Aussie dollars.
Wow.
For the policing.
Hey, thanks, Gavin. We appreciate your time. Thanks for bringing us up to date.
Cheers, guys.
40 months in one building, Joey. How many DVDs has he got?
I'm not sure what he's doing to kill the time, but you'd have to come up with some creative ways.
Joey, the international rules, the team gets announced today, but I'm not going to break any big exclusive by saying you'll be in the team. It's great this year because you get a little a training trip, they're calling it. Where are you training? Are you going to Dubai or Qatar or maybe altitude, Colorado?
We're going to go to New York.
Oh, I see.
Do a bit of training in New York before we go to Ireland. So, no, it's a very exciting time. You're right, the team gets announced today and I've seen the squad and it's a very exciting team. Good mix of young superstars and a few older veterans like myself. But yeah, looking forward to it. New York leg is, they're looking eventually to play a game in either New York or Boston.
Wow.
I think that might be Eddie's dream is to get a game up in the States and get all the Irish over there and the big Irish community there to play. So that's the dream. So what we're doing, we're going to stop through there on the way, spend a few days, a bit of training, but also get together and go to some NFL games and hopefully a basketball game, bits and pieces.
The schedule you told me, it didn't sound like you'd be able to squeeze much training into.
No, there'll be training. Clarko, I played last year and he takes it very seriously. We're very keen to win it. The AFL are keen to make sure we put on a good show after sort of what happened previously with some poor series. So we'll be taking it seriously, but it's a good combination of getting away with, you know, your peers and some guys that you've loved playing against for years. And then we head to Ireland and Croke Park, and hopefully it'll be an 80,000 packed stadium.
Is that as good as everyone says?
Yeah, it is. It's unbelievable. What we think a packed MCG has a feel about it. A Croke Park stadium full of 80,000 mad Irishmen that have so much passion for the place. It is really something special.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. We're about to hear from Greg Norman, but is there one player that you've met in the international rules? Not that you thought was, you know, not someone you'd get on with, but was there someone you spent time with from another club that you thought, wow, he's just a belter?
I really enjoyed the Hawks boys. Grant Birchall, Luke Bruce, I've sort of known Hodge because of the same draft, but those guys were cool. And the other one I really, really got around, Fifey was in the squad last year and was going to play, and I was not hanging around Fifey. He's my man crush at the moment, but actually, unfortunately, he hurt himself, so he didn't play, and not playing this year. But Robbie Gray's the other one. So I'm a footy, I love watching these young superstars and being able to get to knock around them and spend some time with them. Guys like that I really enjoy hanging out with.
Cyril's performance grand final day. Everyone's come in this week and I've asked them. I asked Peter Garrett what he thought about Cyril. Now I want your opinion.
It was handy, wasn't it? Mm. Yeah, it was brilliant. It was good to see him do it. I mean, we know he's been one of the star for a long time, but now to win a Norm Smith, and it was special.
Joey, you're a fan of the great Greg Norman.
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, he was probably a little bit before my time, but you've got to admire what he's been able to do.
I've never seen a bloke pull his head out of the paper and stick the headphones on as quickly as you just did then, great man.
To me then. Sorry about that.
All right. We had a chat with Greg Norman 2 days ago. He's a very busy man. He's just out here in Australia for a couple of things which you'll hear about. You'll hear three parts of Greg Norman between now and 9:30. But this is Greg on Golf Course Design, the Soldier On Foundation and Australian Golf. Great news today, the Eastern Golf Club is opening their new course out at Yeering. It is, of course, Greg Norman Golf Course Design. It's a beautiful operation out there, and on the line is the great man himself, Greg Norman. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Howie. What's going on, mate? I'm a little jet lagged, so I just flew in this morning.
No doubt in your own private jet. I rode to work on my bike, so we're living a different life straight away. But how are you? This is great news out at the Eastern Golf Course. I remember it when it was alongside the Eastern Freeway there. A massive change out there, and from all reports, it's a wonderful course. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks very much, buddy. And at the end of the day, it's all about how the members feel about it. And the reaction I've got here has just been incredibly embracing, and they like it. The golf course is still extremely new, of course. A lot of growing to be had. The nine-hole par three is yet to be completed. But at the end of the day, it's I'm extremely happy with it. The members are happy with it. They got what they asked for. It's a very playable golf course. And at the end of the day, if you can have 1,000-plus members or 300 on the waiting list to get in here, that's a testament in its own right.
Is this still your major passion, Greg? There's a lot of things I want to talk to you about, but it seems to me that golf course design is still right up there for you.
Mike, it always will be, bud. I've always enjoyed it. It's kind of like taking your fingerprint and putting it in different parts of the world. And what I'm most proud about is the fact that this is my 100th golf course I've opened. When I hit the triple digits, it's a kind of a strong statement to make about the way we've penetrated the golf course design business on a global front. And to say my 100th one is here in Australia makes me extremely proud indeed, because, at the end of the day, you want to leave your fingerprint in your homeland as much as you can. And to do it the way I've done it at Eastern Golf Club makes me even more proud.
As it should, Greg. As well as opening the course today, you're conducting a coaching clinic for returned service men and women for the Greg Norman Foundation charity partner Soldier On. I know Mick Malloy here at Triple M is a patron of that organisation. I would imagine that is as rewarding for you as it is for those that you're giving a few golf tips to.
You're 100% correct. The interesting thing that I've noticed within myself, when I played the game of golf at a very high level, you kind of got lost in your own world because you're inside the ropes and you're performing on your own with your caddy and maybe your coach out there. And at the end of the day, you're after the victory in a tournament. But since I've gotten away from the game of golf, I appreciate the other things in life. I appreciate giving back so much more. Soldier On is one of them. I mean, I've been fortunate, very, very fortunate, not only here in Australia, but in the United States, to be involved with a lot of the Wounded Warrior programs and gotten to know some of these incredible military men and women who really give us our freedoms that we so that we so expect. But at the end of the day, there's so many individuals behind the scenes that make it happen for us. So for me to give back in that way is extremely rewarding. So you know, on a global front. I've given clinics on aircraft carriers in Dubai. I've been giving clinics in the Pacific Ocean on aircraft carriers and other places around the world. So for me to give back a little bit is such a simple, easy thing.
Greg, it's been a wonderful year for Australian golf. Obviously, Adam Scott's continued his reasonably good form. Jason Day with a major win. And then Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy. It's like the olden days when it was you and Faldo and Price and all these big names going head-to-head. Were you transfixed by Jason Day like the rest of the country was?
Well, absolutely. I'm an extremely proud Aussie, even though, you know, Jason lives in the States, Adam lives in the Bahamas, and, you know, we all live outside of our home country. But, you know, we all have the Aussie flag on our back, and we're all extremely proud, to represent our country. So whenever any of the young boys step up to the plate, whether it's Mark Leishman, you know, even he had a fantastic year and put his performance as well, you really sit back with a sense of pride to seeing your country, what we can deliver. And it always amazes me, Mark, every year it amazes me, no matter what sport we do. Yes, we have our trials and tribulations, there are ups and downs in team sports and Olympics and golf and tennis and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, the quality of athletes that we produce out of this country is just phenomenal.
Oh, he's a star, Greg Norman. Plenty more of that to come before 9 o'clock. Joey, big event coming up, and you and me and the rest of Melbourne and Australia is invited to the biggest sporting and entertainment event of the summer. It's open season. I love that slogan, open season, for the Australian Open 2016, 18 to the 31st of January. Get your tickets through Ticketek now, Joey. Looking forward to that.
Absolutely. And Harry, another big iconic sporting event happening this weekend, the MotoGP. I believe you were down there during the week, or maybe yesterday, interviewing a few of the riders.
Yeah, crazy, crazy characters, Joe. I think of all the sports people I've dealt with, I used to think jockeys had the biggest nuts, to be honest, is the best way of putting it. But when you see what these boys do on the MotoGP bikes, and they'll be going this week at Phillip Island at 330 kilometres an hour, which is all good and well until you come off, and it's frightening. Daryl Beattie, who's co-hosting the coverage with me on 10, which starts tomorrow at 1 o'clock, has no toes on his right foot because it went in a chain of a bike through the boot and ripped the whole lot off. So they are dangerous, dangerous, dangerous pieces of equipment, and I've got ultimate respect for these boys.
And what about some of the riders? I mean, I'm a big Marquez fan. How's he going, and who are the favourites this weekend? Did you speak to any of the boys?
Yeah, I did. I spoke to Rossi and Lorenzo. It comes down to those two. Rossi leads the championship by 18 points from Lorenzo. You get 25 for a win. There's still three races to go, but this is a man that's 36 years of age. He's going for a 10th world title and charismatic a sportsman as you can deal with. Always got a smile on his face. Lorenzo's a bit more low key, but the best chat I had yesterday was with Mark Marquez, and as you know, two-time world champion. Yeah. He was telling me a story. Jump on YouTube and type in Marquez if you're out there at work at the moment. Just type in Mark Marquez into the Google machine, and there's vision of him riding his bike as an 8-year-old. He first got on a motorbike, Joey, as a 4-year-old. Now, I've got a 3-year-old. He can't walk properly without falling over the big penguin. My little bike, I'm not putting him on a motorbike.
The push bike with the wheelie.
Exactly right. But Marky Mark Marquez first got on a bike at 4. There's vision of him online at 8, and we were talking about that. And he's racing a motorbike at age 8, and he sort of said in a general way, not pumping himself up, but he said, and I'm not going to do his accent after you did your Nick Kyrgios accent earlier in the show. He said that he would start on pole position, so he'd out-qualify everyone else, but he was racing against guys a lot older than him, and the bike was too big for him. So he'd qualify on pole, but his feet couldn't touch the ground, so he couldn't start the bike. So they had to put him to the back of the grid every time. So he'd go from P1 to P26 because his dad had to hold the bike up for him to start the race.
So it was dangerous to be at the front.
Well, he couldn't actually stand the bike up to get it going because his feet wouldn't touch the ground. It's like when your bike's too big. So he'd start at the back. His old man would hold him on and say, "Go, Marky, go!" And off he'd go. And there'd be 10-lap races, and by lap 6, he'd be in front and he'd win.
Wow.
So crazy. Good luck to him. He won 10 races in a row last year, but he's fallen off a lot this year. He's come off 5 times, and I think that's hit his confidence a little bit. But if you ever get the chance, Joey, I think Duck's going down for the first time. You don't have to have any interest in motorsport. If you got down there and see these bikes just for 3 or 4 laps and the speed they do and how late they break, it's you love your sport. It'll blow your whiskers off.
Yeah, I probably should do that because it is crazy, and I love seeing guys that can do amazing things, and on those bikes what they do for the average Joe is unbelievable.
The average Joe, I like it.
Oh, yeah. No pun intended, yeah.
You didn't even mean
it,
did you?
No, I didn't mean that.
time for Joey, you, to fill the pockets of the good people of Melbourne who have pulled their cars over to the side of the road. They're sitting in the office. They want some tips for the Caulfield Cup. Just the main race. We don't worry about all that other rubbish. What have you got for me?
Taking notes. Look, the Caulfield Cup this year.
Firstly, do you know anything about horses before people put their hard earned on it?
Unfortunately, I do.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Been following it. Love the Spring Carnival. But Caulfield Cup this year, it's always great. Look, you always have to keep an eye out for the international horses. They generally... these staying races have a lot more on the Australian horses. So there's a couple of Japanese horses that are coming out, Fame Game and Hoko Brave. I've heard big reports about them that they're both going to be right there in the mix. And if they don't win the Caulfield Cup, they'll be thereabouts in the Melbourne Cup. The little Australian that I like, a horse called Set Square, young up-and-comer that looks like it'll go really well. But it's a tough race. So my suggestions is back a couple of horses. In these races, you can back two or three horses and still make a profit. So that's I always it. Suggest... maybe the Japanese horses and number 17, Set Square.
A Fame Game, that was the horse that your man Zach Purton, who's riding it, he came from Hong Kong, I think, during the week, flew 9 hours, rode it for 5 minutes and went home again.
Yep, he'll fly over, ride that, and that's a good little lead too that obviously he's pretty confident. So what about you, Howie? How much do you know about the horses?
Oh, plenty, Joe, plenty. Not much at all. I first had to cover the Spring Racing Carnival for the Great Seven Network years ago now, and they sent me that first horse racing story I ever did. I had to interview Greg Childs, the jockey, who was on the famous Sunline, who'd won A Cox Plate.
Yep,
that's the one at Moonee Valley,
yes.
If you weren't aware, Joey. And he was going for a second Cox Plate. Obviously a very, very famous horse. And the first question, sat down with him, old Laz Telecki, the camera, and said, right, mate, we're ready to go. First question. So, Greg, Sunline, tell me, why is this horse so good? Why is he so good? And he said, well, firstly, he's a
shoe. Yeah.
That was sort of the end. And he looked at me as if to say, you know nothing about this paper. And he actually started crying in that interview because he was so in love with the horse. So, therefore, you know how much I don't know about horse racing, but I got one for you because your man, Chris Waller, he trains winners all over the shop.
He does.
And you've got G Boss on board, Royal Descent, paying $19. Anything with Greg Boss on board, three-time Melbourne Cup winner on Maccabi Diva, and Chris Waller trained, I think he's value at $19.
I think anything that Chris Waller trains is always in contention. Who Shot the Barman? That's another one of his horses. There's plenty there. So Grand Marshal as well.
Did I call him Greg Boss?
Yeah.
His name's Glenn. Glenn. Too, Joey, you've gone down the wrong path there.
Yeah. Glenn Boss.
Glenn Boss. Greg's his brother. Can't ride.
You don't know much, do you, about the horses?
I told you I didn't know anything about it.
It's an enjoyable look. It's a great time of year, this. Even if you don't follow the races most of the year, this time of year is always plenty of fun, plenty happening, and good little time just to have a little flutter and see if you can win some money.
Do you reckon Greg Boss could win a fourth belt?
Greggy Boss. I'm not sure where he rides. I've never heard of Greggy Boss, but Glenn Boss is still going around. He's still doing really well for one of the older riders.
Beauty. I told you we didn't know too much about it. Joe, we already heard a little bit of Greg Norman. What a great treat we had earlier on in the week. We got to sit down and have a chat with him. You'll hear now from Greg on all sorts of things relating to the Olympics and golf starting there in 2016, which will be interesting. His recent trip to Kyrgyzstan. You ever been to Kyrgyzstan?
Never been to Kyrgyzstan.
Well, you should after you listen to what Greg Norman's got to say. Pack your woolly socks. And we started by asking the great man Greg Norman about Tiger Woods. Tiger, he's obviously having his struggles, Greg. Have they gone past him? Can he ever claw that ground back, or have we seen the best of Tiger Woods and he won't get back to that level, do you think?
I don't think he'll ever get back to the level of where he was, no. I think his body's just given up on him in a lot of ways. I don't care what rehab you go through, your weakest link is going to be your weakest link. And, he just had back surgery. There's a shadow of doubt every time you go out there. Believe me, I've had 12 surgeries myself. So every time you go through a surgery, that little bit of self-doubt, is that going to be okay? Can I hit more balls? Can I hit it as hard as I used to hit it? And remember, he's going on to be 40, and the young kids nowadays are out driving him. And where he, I was in the same position where you were out driving everybody by 15 yards. Now you're being outdriven by 15 yards, so it's a big dent to yourself, and you try and hit it harder, and therefore you become a little bit more erratic. It's unfortunate. Father Time hurts all of us. Every athlete is a pass-through entity in their sport. And, Tiger's put up some phenomenal performances in the years that he had, but will he continue on and win in the future? Yes, he will. There's no question, but he's not going to continue on and dominate like he used to, no.
The Olympics in Rio, Greg, golf makes its first introduction. Some people feel that if the pinnacle of your sport is not to win an Olympic gold medal, then it shouldn't be in the Olympics. Whether you'd rather win the Masters or an Olympic gold medal, I think probably most golfers might choose the Masters. Where do you sit on it?
I'm the other way. If I had an opportunity to represent my country to put a gold medal around my neck, winning for the game of golf in the Olympics, I'd put that up against the Masters, British Open, or any major championship or any tournament I've won. I think that's just, you know, once every 4 years, it's out of respect to your country and your game, and you should step up to the plate as being one of the, you know, the few that have the opportunity to go represent your country in the Olympics. So I think it's a must. I would be doing it. I'd be encouraging anybody to do it. And at the end of the day, it's incumbent on everybody involved with the game of golf, institutions, whether it's the International Golf Federation, whether it's the PGA Tour of the United States, whether it's the USGA, the RNA. We cannot screw up this Olympics. We have to make this Olympics, golf in this Olympics, shine so brightly that the IOC looks into the future and say, well, golf is a sport that's going to stay in the Olympics for many, many Olympics to come.
Greg, I have a dream that one day I'll have enough money, hopefully sooner rather than later, where I can just travel the world to every spot I haven't been. The world fascinates me, and I follow you on social media. You're just back from Kyrgyzstan, where you were sporting a real rough type of beard. You were riding horses. Looked like a wonderful trip. How'd you get yourself out there?
Well, it was just one of those. It was actually a trip that I wanted to do. I'm a big adventurous. I like to hike a lot. I've done hiking in Chile up to about, you know, maybe, you know, 5,400 meters, nearly 5,500 meters, and I really enjoyed it. And I just knew about Kyrgyzstan, and I knew some of the beauty of the place, and I wanted to get there. And so I made this trip, and it really turned into an adventure, quite honestly, Mark. I didn't anticipate it to be as extreme as it was. I was really under-appareled, to tell you the truth. At the end of the day, I went, basically 7 days without a shower, wearing the same clothes. And, it was really, to me, when I came away from it, it was more of a mental and a physical test for myself. And it was really good for me. And I enjoyed it. It was brutal on me. It was brutal on one of my staff who I took with me, because he was a big outdoorsman as well. And it was a test. And so it was an adventure. Would I do it again? Absolutely. I'd do it again under different circumstances. I'd have better boots, or I'd have more warmer socks, and I'd have better gloves.
Underprepared, the big shark, Joey.
Unusual for Greg. He's pretty switched on top of the unit, I would have thought.
Is there one place you'd like to go? Is there one place that fascinates you that you
Oh, you put me on the spot there. Look, I'd love to do Turkey, Greece, and I haven't done any of that yet, so somewhere like that would be awesome. But, geez, it's fascinating listening to Greg Norman, isn't it? Even to say then that the mental and physical challenge was something that he's up for when he's conquered the world and now he's conquering the business world, to still want to have a physical and mental challenge like that just shows the man and what he's got in him.
The first couple of times I interviewed him in front of a television camera, he comes in and sits down, they put the mic on him, and he looks at you with those blue eyes. And I reckon I've interviewed two people ever, Joey, that when they walk into the room, you know they're in the room before you turn around and see them. Well, three with you, Joey. Three. But Greg Norm was one. I don't know why I was interviewing John Travolta at a stage, but he walked in. But when Norman walks into the room, everyone senses him. He's got an absolute aura about him. Yeah, like you do, Joey.
Thank you.
Hot Breakfast is back Monday from New York, and then they're heading off to Ireland, where the International Rules Boys are going, which you mentioned earlier on in the show, Joey. You just got a text and your face went white. You went pale. You got a little edgy, great man.
I did get a bit nervous when you get a text from the AFL media manager, Patrick Keane. My heart sunk. I thought, oh no, what have I said? But no, he was actually saying to make sure that we plug that today at 10 o'clock, I think it is, that the Virgin International Rules Series will be in, the squad will be announced at the Virgin Lounge in Melbourne. Virgin are going to sponsor the event and do a terrific job. And exciting times. We have a really exciting team. A lot of young guns from this year's All-Australian side and some previous All-Australians that are a bit older, like myself, Howie. But it's a great trip. We won the series last year, and the Irish were keen to get us back to Croke Park and do it all again. So we're taking them on November 21, and looking forward to an amazing experience.
Now, Patrick did say don't give away any other names, but all I will say is at the press conference, it's been announced Patrick Dangerfield and Jake Stringer will be at the press conference. Now, I'm not Inspector Clouseau, but I would imagine that means they're in the squad. Now, Jake Stringer, connected young man.
Yes, we are going to spend a bit of time in New York to go to the basketball. I think we're going to the Knicks versus the Cavs. Now, there's just a little whisper that Jake Stringer went to school with Matty Dellavedova out in Maryborough.
I see where they're
from.
Is going.
And there might be some boys that have just been speaking to Jakey Stringer, getting his ear, saying, tee up Dellavedova to possibly get LeBron to come and have a chat. So there's whispers going around about that. I don't know how true, but we're going to roll with it because it is exciting. But there may be a chance that we could meet LeBron at the New Madison Square Garden when we watch the Knicks and Cavs. So fingers crossed that Jakey Stringer comes through with the goods.
Our man, the hyphen here, just loves LeBron and his eyes are just spinning back. He said, if you've got a bit of one-on-one time, what are you going with, Joey? Are you showing Nathan Brown, former Tiger style, who once showed a very famous actor who didn't know what he was, highlights of himself on YouTube playing footy? Is this the type of stuff you'll be doing or not?
That was probably the first thought that came to my head. This is a bit of Tex Walker style to Kyrgios. Just find my best highlight and show LeBron. But no, I'd like to pick his brains. I'd love to just ask him a couple of questions. But I'm sure with 25 mad basketball fans there, I probably won't get a word in. But
well, you could show him highlights of you taking a hanger. Has there ever been highlights of you taking a hanger?
No, there won't be any highlights of that. Actually, you're right. There's not many highlights I should show LeBron. So watching me play. No.
What a wonderful trip that will be. So the announcement today, the international rules squad is at 10 a.m.
I think so, yeah. So tune in. All right. Very exciting.
Joey, just grateful this week on Wednesday to have a chat with Greg Norman, one of Australia's greatest sportsmen. We've heard a little bit already. He's opening his 100th golf course. So he's in a golf course design, opening his 100th today, which is quite extraordinary, at the Eastern Golf Club. That's later this morning at year. And we've already talked to him about Tiger Woods, Australian golf, adventure travel. But, Joey, we couldn't let him go without talking about his success in business. This is Greg Norman. Greg, I remember sitting down with you years ago and you told me that what you need to do, young man, is diversify your investment portfolio. And I didn't have the courage to tell at that stage that I didn't have an investment portfolio. So it was a pretty brief conversation. But looking at your business now, I could get up and I could whack on some Greg Norman clothes and Greg Norman sunnies, go to a Greg Norman golf course, then go out for dinner at a Greg Norman grill, have a Greg Norman steak and wash it down with a Greg Norman wine. It's just complete and utter world domination you've achieved.
Well, I wouldn't call it world domination.
Well, it's pretty close to it.
Well, I would like to get there eventually. That would be my ultimate goal. But at the end of the day, it's just about brand extension. And I've been fortunate enough where I have a great logo. I have a great brand. I've been very brand centric, and I've been very protective of it. And a lot of it's come from vertically integrated to the game of golf. But now it's a little different. The base is so strong right now. I'd rather be a mile wide and an inch deep than an inch wide and a mile deep. So I've got a good foundation underneath me, so it gives me the ability to branch out a little bit more. Because of the success and surviving the global financial crisis, coming out of it the way we have done, we get the respect of institutional investors and other people out there and saying, okay, this guy's got a great business model. Let's see if we can get involved with him. So all of a sudden, you stood the test of time and people respect you for what you've done in business. So at the end of the day, I'll give you an example, Mark. I had a corporate retreat with all my execs just recently out of my place in Colorado, and I gave them a 200-year horizon. I gave them a 12-year and a 200-year, and they all looked at me like I was an idiot, saying, what are you doing talking about 200 years? I said, if I can't give you a couple of multi-generational time periods to think about where your kids and your kids' kids may have the opportunity to come and work for this company, then I've failed in my responsibility for looking into the future. So that's how I look out. I want to build a brand in perpetuity that goes on past my mortality. That's my goal. I'm heading in that direction, and I'm enjoying it.
Greg, if there's one area to invest in now, a product, an area or a country, where are we going? For all those listeners out there that have got their $150 ready to go, where's it going, Greg?
Well, I am going to sit back and say United States is going to be an interesting place to understand with the elections coming up. Once they determine what's going to happen in 2016, I think America right now has been completely overregulated. It's tough on small businesses. It's getting taxed to death. If you get the right president in there with the right House and Congress in there, the Senate in there, you're going to be able to see a lot of money flooding back into the United States. And the United States, it's basically gone to sleep a little bit under this present leadership. And I think with the right leadership and the right fiscal policies for growth and development, you're going to see that country really shine. I think China right now is a place where they've been taking a long-term investment in their infrastructure. Now they're turning their attention to how to grow from a domestic side. Their GDP from a domestic aspect, is in the high fives, early sixes. So they've got plenty of opportunities there. So, look, there's markets around the world. I like Central America.
Ooh.
Love that. I love Mexico. I think Mexico is going to be great. Forget what Donald Trump says about Mexico. I think the opportunities in Mexico is absolutely phenomenal because my golf course design business Caesar. We're an economic indicator there, and we're at the moment got 8 golf courses under construction with potentially another 4 going on. So there's a lot of activity from a growth standpoint, from tourism and residential communities and resorts.
Have you taken your board out to Central America, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Mexico? See, I go there and I think waves. You go there and you think business opportunities. Maybe that's why you're flying on a private jet and I'm riding to work.
Oh, I don't know, but we have built some great golf courses in those regions where the surf, believe me, I stand there and I stare down from the cliff sometimes and I see that beautiful surf coming in across the Pacific. So, no, I haven't as yet. My son just keeps trying to get me to go do that, Mark, and one day he's going to get me once I slow down.
As we let you go, are you a Trump man for the election or are you a Kanye West 2020 type man, Greg?
No, look, I'll be honest with you. I'm not a Trump man. I think he stirred up. He said a lot of things that's necessary to be said. I think a lot of the general public in the United States, as here in Australia, they're fed up with some of the politicians with all the crap that they say and they don't follow up with it. So he's really hit some real strong salient points that stirred up the public. But I personally don't think he'll make it all the way through. But I think there's a couple of others there that really have changed their tune, and they're politicians, and they're stepping up to the plate and probably taking a little bit of what Donald has said and taking it to putting it into their program, and they're getting votes and they're increasing. So from what I'm seeing, he's kind of hit the glass ceiling with voters, and the other ones are catching up to him.
Hey, Greg, best of luck with the opening of the Eastern Golf Club today. You can see it all at www.easterngolfclub.com.au. I reckon the returned servicemen and women will be thrilled this afternoon to get a coaching clinic from you. Growing up loving watching you play golf, it's been a true treat to have a chat with you. I know you're not here long, and you've been very generous with your time. Have a wonderful time back in your home country, and best of luck with everything moving forward.
Yeah, thanks, Mark, and same to you, buddy. You got a great program, and what you've done with yourself too has been very, very impressive.
Howie, what about that at the end? Greg Norman just following Mark Howard's career. Might have stumped you there at the end.
Well, I wanted to replay that for the last 3 days, and we haven't been allowed to be honest, Joey.
How's that for a little finish?
What about, and you were raising your eyebrows, he's discussing politics, GDP of countries. He was a golfer. He's become a statesman, an international businessman. Wow. Is he impressive, Joey?
He might take over the world the way he was talking. Oh, so we need to invest our dollar in America and Mexico.
And Mexico,
okay, we'll buy a golf course in Mexico.
Yeah, that's Howie. Right. No, he does talk sense, and you could tell that from what he had to say at the end. He's a very, very clever man. Joey, thanks for coming in and giving us a chop out. You've been fantastic.
No worries. I heard you needed a hand after sitting it by yourself yesterday and struggling, so I came in to help you out.
I wasn't struggling, but no. it was. And our thoughts out there with Duck as well. Hopefully he's okay. Best of luck. Enjoy the rest of your off-season, Joey. Thanks for coming in. Big hot breakfast starting back Monday. Mick Molloy one-on-one with Jarryd Hayne, which I've been told is a cross between Parkinson and McIlvaine. It's one of the great interviews. Hugh Jackman will also be into joining Eddie, Mick and Luke, so looking forward to that. Couldn't have got the show done this week without Jay, who's been unbelievable. That's why he's the best in the business. And Hyphen, seeing him at 6 o'clock in the morning is frightening, but he's done a wonderful job pressing the buttons. Hope you've enjoyed the show. The big boys will be back next week. The Dead Set Legends will be back tomorrow from 9 a.m. with Jude Bolton, with all sorts of guests. Looking forward to that. Thanks, Joey.
Thanks, Howie. It's been a pleasure. Enjoyed it.
Enjoy the Caulfield Cup and the MotoGP in the best city in the world, Melbourne. Triple M Dead Set Legends.